Christian Beckner is Deputy Director of the Center for Cyber and Homeland Security at George Washington University, and writing about the 2014 Fusion Center assessment from the Department of Homeland Security. We have a link to it at federalnewsradio.com. Christian, you have three key takeaways here. The first one has to do with Fusion Center costs. What did you learn by reading this assessment, and what do you think is noteworthy about what the Fusion Centers cost?
One of the really informative items in the report that DHS put out is if you look at who is actually funding Fusion Centers, the report corrects something of a misnomer as to the source of funds for Fusion Centers. Most people sort of assume that these are federal entities run and funded by the federal government, but in reality, a majority of the funding, over 56%, comes from state and local budgets, so the budgets of governors and mayors making their own investments, not from federal funds, but from their own tax dollars. And a smaller amount, only 43% of the funding, came from federal money, either in terms of staff who are deployed covering their salaries who are working at the Fusion Centers, or indirectly through the Homeland Security grants that go out to states and cities.
What's been traditionally the way that you would look at return on investment on something like that, too? If 43% of the money, $143 million, sounds like a lot of money, that's only 43% of what goes to the Fusion Centers. But in a conversation with the Inspector General of DHS the other day, I was reminded the agency's budget is upwards of $60 billion. So that's kind of a drop in the bucket when you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it is a relatively small amount of money when you compare it to the Department of Homeland Security's budget and compare it to the intelligence community budget, or generally what we're spending on Homeland Security and counterterrorism across the federal government. You know, basically, I look at that investment as a force multiplier. You have a couple of million local law enforcement, local fire, first responders around the country who, you know, Fusion Centers provide a way to share information with them, train them, inform them on risks and threats that are federal priorities, while at the same time, because of the investments that are made directly by states and cities, these Fusion Centers also, in many cases, address local priorities, different criminal issues, or other sort of issues related to different types of threats that are found more at the local level and are less national security issues.
And I haven't seen any scientifically collected data that I can recall, but every person that I ever talked to that's had any interaction with a Fusion Center at any level always says, boy, these things are tremendously valuable, and they've helped in, and then they detail one or two different examples, at least, of situations where their Fusion Centers have really provided actionable information.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are examples every day of that, not necessarily at the major terrorism case in terms of their role, but in terms of supporting efforts against organized crime or drug trafficking or other serious crime at the state and local level. And there have been some terrorism cases, notably the Najibullah Zazi case in Aurora, Colorado, who then went to New York City to was planning a terrorist attack there in 2009, where the Colorado Fusion Center played a significant role. But you know, they do have role both in terms of those national security issues and state and local issues.
Christian, your second key takeaway from the annual report from DHS on the National Network of Fusion Centers is noting that the Network of Fusion Centers issued 272 collaborative analytic reports in 2014. What is a collaborative analytical report, and why is it noteworthy that we got 272 of them?
So 272 is an increase, more than doubling from 115 in the previous year. And a collaborative analytic report is where a report that a Fusion Center is putting out, where it's not just by one Fusion Center, but it's by two or some cases three or four, all of which having their seals at the top of the report, all of which having analysts contribute to, you know, the particular issue that's being studied. And the significance of this is that it shows that analysts are working horizontally across the nation without federal involvement in many cases to assess issues that help to identify where there may be key trends, patterns, you know, exist that may not have otherwise been noticed by a single center doing a report. Something that may appear as incidental if it's identified by one Fusion Center in one state or city, if that same trend is being seen in another state and city in terms of suspicious activity or in terms of the way a particular drug trafficking or human trafficking organization is operating, that becomes information that's valuable from an intelligence standpoint, from an analytics standpoint.
So this is an example, if I read you correctly, of horizontal connections and collaborations rather than what everybody feared would be the issue with fusion centers when they were first stood up, which is DHS pushes information down and the fusion centers push information up to DHS, the local authorities, but there's not really any horizontal interaction. This seems to be evidence that that's not the case, that that's not happening, and that's good news.
Yeah, I mean, there is a vertical role there, but the ultimate goal is to make the fusion centers into a horizontal, almost self-organized network that has federal support, interacts with federal agencies, with the FBI, with DHS, but ultimately can share information across state and local lines without always needing information to go up to headquarters and then back down to the field.
Christian Beckner of the George Washington University Center for Cyber and Homeland Security, writing about the Homeland Security Department's National Network of Fusion Centers annual report. And your third key takeaway is about the limits of performance assessment. You write, the report notes that the 78 fusion centers averaged a score of 96.3 out of 100 on the assessment of their capability. I don't care what the trend is, and you write about it, and I'll hear about it in a moment, I imagine, but I don't care what the trend would be. 96.3 out of 100 is pretty good on just about every scale I've ever heard of.
Yeah, and I think this is a sign that on average, the fusion centers have made tremendous progress in the past 4 years. The average score in 2011, when this assessment was first done using the same set of criteria that are used this year, was 76.8, and these are objective criteria in terms of different capabilities and different, you know, different things that the centers have. So, you know, an increase from 76 to 96 is, I think, a demonstration of significant progress that has been made to address issues related to their capabilities, their processes, and also their ability to address certain privacy and civil liberties concerns in terms of making sure they have adequate oversight and governance of potential privacy and civil liberties related risks.
You note it's important to recognize the limits of this assessment process, as the Government Accountability Office noted in a report released in November 2014. What are the limits of the assessment process, and how do they inform the way that we should look at them, regardless of whether they're successful or not as successful?
Sure. The GAO had noted that these assessment scores represent their progress in establishing certain capabilities, certain policies and procedures, but didn't necessarily reflect their sort of output, their performance, or their contributions to the broader Homeland Security mission. So, you know, now that you've built up capability and you have, you know, a clear set of capabilities across this network of fusion centers, you know, what I think makes sense for DHS to do as they continue this assessment process is to figure out ways to modify the assessment process to address these issues of performance and effectiveness more clearly, so that both the federal government and state and local governments can have assurances that they're getting a solid and adequate return on their investment.
And you allude to that as you wrap up your commentary. It's imperative the next assessment be revamped and focused not only on capability building, but also assessing these issues of performance and effectiveness. My read of that, and tell me if I'm right, Christian, is we've hit this level of effectiveness, and now it's kind of time to up the game and make sure we're continuing to advance and improve and not just hit 100 and decide everything's fine.
Yeah, we've hit this basic level of operational maturity for the most part across the network of centers. So now it's basically continuing to sort of make sure that you're delivering what's intended in terms of value, in terms of your operations, in terms of your effectiveness.